From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour is being made in the fields, in the orchards, on the farms all across western New York, and we are headed for the harvest season, but really harvesting different fruits and vegetables has been going on since the spring. Very slow start to the year after that rough winter, cold early spring. What we want to do this hour is a couple of things when it comes to agriculture. Number one, we want to check in on how the growing season has gone and what the economic impact is. And we also want to talk about what we can expect coming up in the fall. And then we want to hit some other agricultural issues. It's part of our effort to continue covering agricultural issues related to Western New York on Connections. And so I'm glad to be joined as kind of co-hosting the hour by my colleague Michelle Faust, who you know Michelle not only now reporting for us, but also came from Yuma, Arizona. And Michelle came here in February when it was raw and cold, and she said in Yuma, the crops were always kind of flowing, weren't they?
That's right. In Yuma, Arizona is where most of the winter vegetables, so when it is frozen in the rest of the country, Yuma, Arizona, which has most of the water coming from the Colorado River, is producing all sorts of vegetables, mostly lettuce. So any of that lettuce that you get, all those bags, the bag salad really makes the economy for Yuma County.
And you saw that in your career there. Now here, as you mentioned earlier this morning, it's important to cover agricultural issues on the growing side, on some of the other sort of policy and social issues and all the different things going on with agriculture. And so I know you have helped line up our first guest for the hour.
That's right. We're hoping to get on the phone very shortly. Dean Norton, he's the president of the New York Farm Bureau, and he can talk to us about basically his job is to back up farmers and to help them with all of their needs. Sometimes it's labor issues. Sometimes it's getting extra help with different policy. There's a lot of lobbying going on and going to Albany and going to D.C. and making sure that they're backing up farmers. Isn't that right, Dean Norton?
Yep, that's correct, Michelle.
So
a large part of what my job is to make sure that our elected representatives, whether they be in Albany or Washington D.C. or locally, have a keen understanding of the issues that are affecting agriculture, and that those things that they might do, whether it's a state budget or legislatively in laws, and how they will either benefit or be a detriment to agriculture. So that's a large part of my job and focus on a daily basis.
So right now we're going into a very important season. It's the harvest season for apples. And how important are apples and that harvest for the economy of New York State?
Well, it's very, very, very important to New York for many reasons. New York is the number two apple-producing state in the country, behind Washington State. And they're a large part of what drives people out to the country in the fall. Folks going out to U-Pick operations or farmers markets to have an opportunity to go out in the orchard and pick their apples, or just to be outside and in the air and seeing what's happening and helping the farmers and the fruit growers have a chance to bear fruit to the toils and tribulations of the growing season and see the harvest come through and enjoy the cornucopias, all part of it.
Our guest is Dean Norton, the president of the New York Farm Bureau. I was with my 2.5-year-old at a U-Pick operation a couple of weekends ago, Dean, and he picked some of the first apples of the season, at least at that farm, Green Acres Farm in Greece. It was Zestars. And that made me wonder. I said, the next time I talk to Dean Norton, I'm going to tell him, I need you to name every single apple variety.
That's not possible, Evan.
I'm amazed at how many. There are so many.
What's that?
There seems to be, every time I feel like I go to the farm market, I see a variety that I don't even recall having seen before. And I love my fruits and vegetables. It's remarkable how many there are.
There are hundreds of different varieties of apples all across the United States. Some, are by region here in New York or out in Washington or Michigan or Ohio, Pennsylvania, depending on the growing regions and the soils and types of things there, it might depend on whether the apple can grow or not. But there are hundreds of different varieties of apples and more on the way. I think, as last year, Cornell came out with two new varieties. And I know that they have more on the drawing board, and I look forward actually this year to being able to take a bite of a snapdragon or a ruby frost and see how successful Cornell was with their breeding program in those two new varieties.
Dean, what was it last year or the year before that was really, really awful for apples? Maybe 2012?
2012, yeah. If everyone can remember back, we had a very, very warm start to the spring. In March, you know, we had temperatures in the 70s and 80s in early mid-March, and that caused the trees and the fruits to bloom like a month earlier than normal. And then we ended up with a late frost early in April, which killed a lot of the blossoms on the trees. So, you know, our production was actually cut in half, about in half, in 2012. So, that was a rough year growing-wise, and because of that, you know, prices were actually higher at the supermarkets because of the lack of product. But we did follow it up last year with a great year, and it looks to me this year we're going to have another banner year with a great growing season that we've had.
Before we get to the phones, and if you want to join the conversation, you can do that. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. We're right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. One more quick question on sort of the state of the apples, Dean. When I recently bought orange juice, I mean, it was $5.70 for orange juice, and I think that is just a direct result of Florida dealing with crop issues for oranges there. So obviously prices get impacted when things are up and down. When it comes to our apple crop now, you indicate it's sort of solid. Prices should be pretty stable. Whether you're buying ciders, et cetera, should be more in line with what people expect?
Yes, yes. The price of cider rose a couple of years ago because of just the lack of apples that supply the demand. But over the last year and this year, you've seen those prices go back to what we would expect to be the normal retail price in the supermarket or the roadside stand.
I should introduce our other studio guest who's just joined us here. So I'm Michelle Faust. My colleague is co-hosting the hour, and we have with us in studio Kira White. She is the Vice President of Horticultural Affairs for Honey Hill Organic Farm in Livonia. That's sort of the cheeky title, isn't it?
A little bit. Well, basically, since we have cattle, chickens, other operations on the farm, and I do the vegetables, I am the only person there managing the vegetables.
VP of Horticultural Affairs.
Yes, basically.
How has how's the growing season been for you guys out at Honey Hill Organic Farm?
Well, we had some trouble in the spring. We had wet weather, dry weather, very warm spells, and it was a little bit problematic with a lot of the heavy rains. A lot of my small seeded crops did not grow because we got soil crusting. And had to replant them at a later date, and we had a gap in our harvest. But we do have drip irrigation at the farm, so that's helped us to mediate some of the drought issues that we had midway through the summer as well.
And Michelle came from Yuma, Arizona, so you might not have seen as much hail there. But every time we get hail, I cringe for grape growers, apple farmers, et cetera, et cetera. Michelle, let's ask an anecdotal question, Michelle, and then I want to hear what Dean and Kira say about this. You've been here for 8 months, roughly 8 months.
I arrived in February.
Okay, 6-7 months now. Does it seem like rain and weather events, when it does rain, it's more extreme here, or is that just me? It feels like lately farms have had to deal with a little bit more extreme precipitation. We rarely just see a steady rain. Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't know how to make that comparison because I'm basically
the desert.
The desert is extreme at all times. Even when we get rain, it's massive flooding. But you know, here we get every extreme to and every in between. So I don't really know what that means for growers. But I know that every time there was a heavy rain, sometimes the growers were happy in southern Arizona because that meant more water. But then too much water when you've just seeded, as you just mentioned, could be a problem. And then, you know, we rarely, but occasionally have a freeze. If you have a freeze on fresh lettuce that's just about to harvest, that can really cause some damage to those leaves. And people don't buy frozen leaf lettuce because it messes it up.
Well, and so let's ask, I'll start with Dean and then I'll ask Kira. Is it just my observation that it seems like in the last few years we've seen a little more hail, a little more heavy rain when it rains, or Or is that actually happening? And are growers dealing with a little bit more adverse precipitation, Dean, for lack of a better word?
I would suggest that we've had some varying weather patterns than what we're used to, specifically over the last 3 or 4 years. You know, when you've got 75 and 80 degree weather in March, and then you're freezing in April, and you know you're having too much rain, like we've had the last couple springs, where planting seasons have been delayed, if not right outright canceled, because you couldn't get into the fields till too late in the year. We have been dealing with some different weather patterns, but it's something that we as farmers are having to find ways to deal with, whether it be Kira mentioned irrigation that's too dry, or putting in drainage tiles so that we can drain fields better and faster. But it is just something that we have dealt with over the last 3, 4, 5 years.
And again, Kira White is here with Honey Hill Organic Farm in Livonia. Give me that sense for, maybe that is my imagination, but I always feel for growers when I see more extreme rain or hail or things like that. How's it been in recent years?
I have definitely noticed that the last few years when we do get heavy rain events, and we've had some 2-inch within a few hours rain events, and it's detrimental to the soil, especially if you have bare soil, and you're prone to get erosion, and a lot of times it'll damage the crops as well. And it's helpful to have the water, but at the same time, getting so much all at once, and I've noticed that's been more prevalent as far as, if we do get heavy rain, it's all at once.
Yeah, it's just what it feels like lately, and that's why I think if you're the VP of Horticultural Affairs, that makes it even more difficult. We have a pile of phone calls to get to, and let's kind of get through some of these before we welcome in some other farmers who are going to be joining us by phone. Let's start with Rich in Rochester. Go ahead, Rich.
I just have a couple of questions on apples. One, what's the oldest known variety of apples that we are still harvesting in the U.S., and is it true that to keep an apple type consistent, you have to do grafting because you can't get it from a seed?
Dean, you want to try to tackle it? Or Kira? Let me start with Kira. Go ahead, Dean.
I'll answer to the best of my ability first, and then, Kira can go with her horticultural knowledge. I couldn't answer what the oldest variety is that's still in existence. Are still being sold, but I do know that we have some varieties that are well over 100 years old that are being sold. I know some friends in the New England area, they have trees that are over a couple hundred years old that are still bearing fruit. So, it's hard for me to say. And the grafting, that's just an exercise that's used to be able to get the trees to market sooner rather than later. That's just a way of being able to take a sapling and, grafting it to another rootstock so that the tree can come to adult age sooner than if it went through the normal process or cycle.
As far as getting apples to be true to type, so if you have, say, a Granny Smith apple and you want another Granny Smith apple, you will have to graft it, because with apple seeds, you get whatever you get because the two parents produce different offspring.
Hybrids, is that the right term?
It would be hybrids, yes.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Rich?
Yeah. So so the grafting thing is true. To get that type, you have to always graft it.
Yes. If you want the same apple as you intend to get, you have to use a graft.
Thanks for the call, Rich. This is Bernard in Fairport. Go ahead, Bernard.
Yeah, I'm interested in the products, but I think one of the things I'd like to hear is a kind of an overview of who are the farmers. How big are they in New York State, for example? Because, I go and buy a carrot. What I'd like to know is who made this carrot, and, how is their life, and how are they dealing with all of the problems that are going on in our economy. So it just seems to me that if you want to kind of get the right price for vegetables, you have to appreciate the people that produce them. And I'd be interested in kind of a rundown, a profile, if you will, of who's doing this farming in New York State. and for that matter, the world. Thanks very much.
I love that question because, again, it's a sign that people want to know where their food comes from. They want to know more about that. And so let me start in studio. Kira, tell us a little bit about the background for Honey Hill Organic Farm in Livonia, and then Dean will kind of give us a wider profile. Go ahead, Kira.
Well, I wish that more people had that perspective, that they wanted to know where their food comes from. But as far as our farm, I have been there for 5 years now. I started basically helping out picking rocks, and now I manage the whole vegetable operation. So,
and every time, by the way, we have some folks from either Wegmans Nutrition or Farm Bureau, they get so excited to see young farmers, and Kira's a young, you're a young farmer, so.
Yes.
And that's exciting to them, that people want this career, that it excites them.
Well, I guess the statistic is something along the median age of farmers is 60 in the United States right now.
And Michelle, you're nodding at that?
Yeah, it definitely is an older age. And actually, also a lot of people who work on farms, especially one of the things that I did a lot of coverage on was farm labor. A lot of the people who are working, I think the median age for the people who are harvesting, for example, those people were over 45 years old. So that's part of the problem, too, is getting enough people to actually do the labor, harvest, and plant the seeds.
Interesting. Dean, you want to weigh in on sort of the broader profile of what farms are?
Yes, sir. I'll just give some general economic numbers and economic impact for here in New York. We have about 36,000 farms in the state of New York, and they use about 7 million acres of land in the state of New York. And the direct farm farmgate revenue or dollars is about $5 billion a year. And those are just direct from the farm. But the overall industry, we have about 196,000 jobs and almost $40 billion in economic activity comes out of New York agriculture. In that, New York is number three in the country in dairy production. And an article that was just in last week's Democratic Chronicle, you know, we're number one in cabbage production, which might amaze a few people. And, you know, in apples, I just mentioned, we're number two. Grapes, we're number three. Sweet corn, we're number four. And then, you know, generally, a lot of people think commodity, you know, farming is just commodities, corn and soybeans. We're actually down in the mid to low 20s when it comes to those commodity type of agriculture. So here in New York, we really are a consumer-based, buy local type of agriculture. You know, that segment is growing more and more every year, where the consumer wants to know where their food is coming from. They like to be able to meet the farmer that has grown it. So you know, that's generally the broad overview of here in New York. But unfortunately, you know, some things we can't grow in New York seasonally or all year round. You know, strawberries in New York, you know, they're about a five-week crop here in New York. You know, that's why you see a lot of strawberries coming from Arizona or California or Mexico. You know, same as lettuce and carrots and some of those things. We just don't have the growing season and capability to grow them here, so they come out of state. But all in all, agriculture is an important part of the New York's economic fabric and overall economic well-being.
Hey, real quick, Dean, Mark online wants to know how pumpkins look this year.
Pumpkins, you know, for everything I've heard, pumpkins look great this year. There again, 2 years ago, you know, pumpkins were a problem because of the late getting, or this is actually you know, late getting them planted because of the weather. And then if we all remember in 2011 with Hurricane Irene, you know, a lot of the pumpkins in the southern part of the state and in eastern New York actually were flooded away in those storms. So everything I'm hearing, pumpkins are in good stead this year, and everyone should have a good pumpkin crop.
Kira, are you hearing the same?
Pumpkins are an extremely small part of our operation, but I have harvested some absolutely gorgeous pie pumpkins just last week.
So right now, if you're a pumpkin, which is not a good thing to be, no real trouble with growing this year.
Nope.
Okay, that's always. Let's get one more quick call from our listeners, John in Rochester. Go ahead, John. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm starting up a small farm. It was my grandfather's farm, and I'm trying to rehabilitate it. And I was wondering if the panel had any information that might be able to help me get this off the ground.
Dean is with the New York Farm Bureau. Go ahead.
couple things. In this last state budget, the New York State Legislature put in the Beginning Farmer program, where there's going to be loans and other grants and things to help you get that farm off the ground. Then when it comes to, you know, educational expertise, you know, I would send you over to Cooperative Extension and talk to some of the folks over there that could help you to understand, you know, your soils, the types, what would grow there, you know, tell you what your fertility is and what the not, and then work through New York State Department of Agricultural Markets and those folks and look for some grant funding if you want to get things off the ground. That and, you know, I think just actually going and meeting and talking to some other local farmers, they'll tell you the history of the land and they'll tell you what's going to grow there and they'll tell you what's successful for them and go from there. I think as Curie will tell you, it's probably a lot of hard work and, you know, trial and error to make it successful.
She's smiling.
Yes, a lot of trial and error.
But hopefully not too much error, but sometimes.
No.
No, it's a great question, and hopefully you got some helpful answers there, John. Thanks for the call. If you're just joining us, we're talking about sort of the state of the farming industry as we head toward what we traditionally call the harvest season. Dean Norton is on the line with us, the president of the New York Farm Bureau. Kira White's in studio. She's with Honey Hill Organic Farm in Livonia. My colleague Michelle Faust has covered agricultural issues, and as we as our engineer Dave grabs some of the other farmers who are going to talk to us from our local area about the kind of growing season they're experiencing. Michelle, I know that a lot of agricultural coverage goes far beyond just what's coming right out of the ground. As you said, there's labor issues and there's other issues to consider.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I've got several questions for Dean Norton because I am just kind of pretty new to the area, learning the agricultural issues that are relevant to New York State. But I wonder, Dean Norton, from your perspective, what are the biggest misconceptions of agriculture in general? People, it seems to me, from my perspective, the people that I speak to, really don't know where their food is coming from or how important it is to the economy. Maybe from your perspective, agriculture in general, and maybe we can narrow it down to New York agriculture.
Biggest misconceptions, I think you hit it right off the head.
Oh, we lost him for a second there, Dave. I'll let our engineer know. We lost him for just a moment. See if Dean is still there. And want to reconnect with him here? All right, here's what we'll do. All right, here's what we'll do. While we reconnect with Dean Norton, who is the president of the New York Farm Bureau, we will welcome our next guest who's on the phone with us, and that's Andy Fellens from Fellens Family Farm in Phelps. Right, Andy?
Yes, in Phelps.
All right, so I don't want to take too much of your time. It's always tough to ask farmers during harvest season to come in, but give me a sense for how you guys down there in Phelps have experienced the growing season. Sort of biggest challenge and best crops.
Biggest challenge was coming out of the winter. I was really nervous April and May if we were going to get a good crop because it was so cold so long and so wet. We were late getting started, but best crops have been almost all of our vegetables, especially the cooler, weather-loving vegetables. We grow for community-supported agriculture programs and do about 100 different vegetables and fruits each season, and we've had real good success across the board this year.
Okay. We had a chance to talk earlier this hour about weather and whether farms have seen, you know, maybe a little bit more extreme precipitation. I'm not talking about sort of residual effects when hurricanes come up the coast or things like that. I'm talking about whether when it rains harder or more extreme or more hail. How have you guys, what have you experienced at Fellens Family Farm?
We have experienced a lot of rain, just like a lot of other people this season. And yeah, I do think it's wetter than it has been the last few years. It seems like when it comes, the rain is more intense and everything just gets soaked and saturated, and it's a day or two before it's dried out and we're able to get back out in the field and work again.
And I will ask Andy and Kira, if that situation is, you know, I don't want to get too climatological, but is there a feeling that it's related to warming or anything else, or is it just more sort of the random vicissitudes of nature?
You know, I honestly don't know. I don't dispute the climate warming, or the climate change at all, but I thought there was a great line in that Cosmos series earlier this year between the difference between climate and weather, and we're seeing a lot of variability in our weather right now.
Kira, do you think, is there anything in your mind that leads you to understand why we've seen, you know, an inch of rain in half an hour and more often those kind of conditions?
Well, not being a climate scientist, but being outdoors on a regular basis and just observing, I think it's climate shift. You know, we are seeing weather patterns that haven't really, in my mind, previously been seen in this area, and I'm not going to claim to know what's responsible, but things are changing, and I'm just trying to go with it and make the best farming choices I can. And you know, you're always going to get thrown some curveballs throughout the season, and hopefully the weather can stabilize and not keep dumping all of this rain and variability on us.
Yeah. One more quick question for Andy Fallons, and I'll let him get back to work, and then we've got Dean Norton from the Farm Bureau back on the line. Andy, as you look ahead to the fall, what are you most optimistic about when it comes to growing in the fall?
All of our late season crops are coming in really nice. We've started to harvest some of the early fall squashes, and the rest of the squash looks great. Our potatoes are looking really good. Our onions are looking good. I'm just, across the board, really happy with how the end of the season is shaping up for us.
You deserve it after what everyone dealt with in the winter and early spring, don't you think? So.
Yeah, I'm happy to go be ending the year on a high note.
There you go. Andy Fallons from Fallons Family Farm in Phelps. Thank you for taking the time to call in, Andy.
Well, thank you.
All right, and we've got Dean Norton back on the line, and Michelle, I know he was talking about at the time biggest misconceptions, right?
That's right. So, Dean, I'm sorry that we missed you there where we didn't get your answer, but what I had asked before was what are the biggest misconceptions about agricultural in general, and then what are some of the misconceptions and things that people don't really know about New York agriculture?
Well, thanks for having me back. I didn't know it would be so soon. I think you mentioned earlier just the misconception. I think the biggest misconception is for people to understand where their food really comes from. Too many people, you know, whether it's you know, children or adults, you know, think that they can just go to Wegmans or Tops and pick up whatever they need, and generally they can. But they don't understand that there's a farmer behind just about everything that they eat, that they wear, and sometimes that provides the electricity or fuel that they use or energy that they use on a daily basis. So I think it's important that we get people to understand that, you know, it's agriculture that provides the food, fuel, and fiber that we all as humans use on a daily basis. So that, I think, is probably the biggest misconception is getting people to understand where their food comes from. And it's tough to do, but I think we're starting to get back into the schools and people are starting to understand how important agriculture is. And I think the Buy Local movement is a big part of that. Some of the issues that I think that people probably don't understand that are facing New York, I think the number one issue, I think, in agriculture in general is just the labor issue, and whether it's immigration reform that we so desperately need here in the United States, not just for agriculture, but for other you know, industries, or whether it's just the general lack of labor and not having enough people willing to do the hard, back-breaking labor that it takes to get these crops, A, planted, and B, harvested. So those are some of the things, and I think some of the other things that we've been working on recently is for a long time, lack of credit from some of our new and beginning farmers and some of our existing farmers was an issue. I think we've worked on those through the Farm Bill that was signed into law in February and with the New York legislature just last year in the budget. Are some of the major things. And then I think, you know, the last thing that I'll mention that is huge for us and for a lot of people is just the over-regulation of our industry. And I will say right here, right now, you know, agriculture is being attacked by the Environmental Protection Agency by some of the rules and regulations that they have come up with and are trying to come up with. I don't know if everyone's familiar with the changes on the waters of the U.S., But they're going back and trying to reinterpret some of the rulings that were made on the Clean Water Act that was passed in 1972 that would give them the ability to come on to our farms and our farmland and pretty much dictate to us, you know, what we could and couldn't do. So there's some issues for you to ponder on what we face on a daily basis here at Farm Bureau.
We only have Dean for another couple minutes, and I will say that I think his comment there is its own hour.
It surely is. I mean,
I think it's a separate discussion on rules, regulations, what's being done and why. And so, Dean, I hope on a future day we can convene a discussion and you'll come back and talk about that specific issue, because I know it's important. But I know, Michelle, you've covered immigration. He brought up immigration. What stands out to you, Michelle?
That's right. I really wanted to talk to you about this situation. I think most people don't understand the whole farm labor issue. And I wanted you to kind of talk to me a little bit about this. How has this not passing comprehensive immigration reform hurt the agricultural industry in New York State? I might have the visa number wrong. Is it H-2A or H-1A is the visa that allows people to be in the country to work on, as a migrant farm worker?
Oh, that would be the H-2A visa program. Yep.
Okay, so can you talk to me about what is the status of these people, and do we have enough of these people working in our farms and harvesting the fruits and vegetables that we eat on a daily basis?
No, we have a labor issue here, you know, not just New York, across the country. And what does that mean? So that means that, you know, we've been talking about apples today. So that means that there's not going to be enough hands to be able to pick those fruits. So apples will be left probably on the trees. Grapes could be left on the vines. Other crops that are hand-picked could be left to rot as well. And that's just a matter of the fact that we don't have enough people to harvest all we have. So that means that whoever the grower is or the farmer is going to be losing a possibility of that income into his coffers. And that money, A, won't be spent into the community. So it not only just affects the fact that the farmer is going to leave crops on the fields or on the trees, but you know, there's less of an economic benefit to the overall community when that farmer has to leave crops to be grown. And then we also have, you know, what could it mean if we had another short year in apples like we had 2 years ago? That could mean greater cost to the consumer. So you know, there's a couple issues there. And then what, you know, people need to understand and realize, and I know I'm regressing over here, is, you know, anytime you're buying an apple, a tomato, a banana, or any most of your fruits or vegetables, those were all picked by hand. Those weren't mechanically harvested. So there was a person behind them picking them. And we don't have enough of those people behind there picking them. So, you know, we worked long and hard with the Senate to get Senate 744 passed that helped us with our immigration problem here in the United States. Unfortunately, the House of Representatives did not get any legislation passed there. So what we are left with is, you know, the H-2A visa program, which you mentioned, and that's a vehicle which a lot of growers use. But as we were talking about paperwork earlier, there's a lot of paperwork involved. It's a very laborious program. There's a lot of rules and regulations. And if you want workers next spring, you need to be working on your paperwork now. You know, not when you need them. And then there's the ability that you won't get them, period.
We're going to be talking a lot more about this H-2A visa situation and how a lot of growers want to have that expanded. But I want to talk to you about how that affects dairy farms, because I read an article recently that said something that I didn't know before, and that is that the H-2A visa don't help dairy farmers because they need people working year-round, and H-2A usually deals with people who are seasonal.
Correct. The H-2A program is a seasonal visa program. So generally, the individual who gets an H-2A visa is not allowed to be in the country any longer than 10 months. So I think, as most of us know, that dairy farms are not a seasonal farm occupation or process. It's a year-round thing. So farmers, dairy farmers, are not allowed into the H-2A program. So unfortunately, a lot of their workers, migrant workers, may be undocumented workers, and then there involves another issue we're going back to the workers and, the legal process of which, we find ourselves in when it comes to hiring people and asking for information and not being able to ask certain questions. So.
Now, Dean, is there some sort of a proposed solution that, you're in the Farm Bureau pushing forward to find a solution in Washington, D.C. right now?
So, yeah, I mentioned earlier Senate Bill 744. That was an immigration, comprehensive immigration bill that was passed in the Senate in the fall or summer of 2013. And that had a lot of the issues that we have now resolved, whether it's a new visa program to allow workers to be here year-round for up to 3 years on a visa, being able to renew it twice so they could be here about 6 years, or whether it came to how we deal with the undocumented workers here in the United States and also dealt with, wages and benefits and so forth. So, that was all part of the comprehensive immigration reform that the Senate passed, and we had been working with the House to get their version passed before the election season came upon us, but we weren't able to do that. So it doesn't look like anything's going to be done this year on immigration reform, but we will continue to working. And, the Senate 744 really is a lot of hard work, and there's a lot of what we're looking for in immigration reform when it comes to agriculture.
We'll be following up with plenty of stories on that. I've already gotten started on that. Dean Norton, president of New York Farm Bureau, I really appreciate you coming up on the phone, and we'll be talking again very soon.
Right. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
Dean Norton from the New York Farm Bureau. We had a couple of guests who probably have a ton to do here who've been waiting so patiently. Kira White is here from Honey Hill Organic Farm in Livonia. Ben Eskin has been waiting to talk to us on the phone from Pachamama Farm in Farmington. And I imagine, Ben, this is a busy afternoon for you. You and your wife, Emma, are sort of sending your stuff all over the place on an afternoon like this, right? I mean, aren't you kind of loading up? And I don't know if you're going to restaurants or customers.
We are. Emma just took off sending a bunch of produce to restaurants this afternoon.
Okay, so I'll try to be as quick as I can with Ben and with Kira, because Kira, you have a date at 2 o'clock, don't you?
Yes, I'm going over to the new grocery store off of East Avenue, Hart's Grocers, and hopefully we can strike up an arrangement whereby they carry our produce.
All right, so I'm going to ask Kira and Ben the same question then. Are you finding from Honey Organic Farm, and I don't know how far and wide you want to go, but are you finding markets, are you finding customers in sort of various locations, and are you finding that in Rochester local farms are appreciated and welcomed in and celebrated?
There is a culture in this area that likes to support local farms. A lot of the restaurants do source local produce. There are many farmers markets in the area, not just the public market, but lots of producer-only markets. So we sell it a few. We do have some restaurant contracts, and we try to find those outlets that appreciate what is grown here. And it seems to me that local produce, family-grown produce, might come at a premium as opposed to things that are sourced through wholesalers. And it's just very nice to find organizations and businesses that appreciate and are willing to go that way.
Do you find that it's different than other communities? Because I know that a lot of places in the country, there's a lot of talk about the very large producers. And I did notice that there are more locally sourced growers and a lot of restaurants that are more interested in that. How do you think it compares to the rest of the country?
Well, I can't speak for the whole country, but this year I actually I've finally taken on another employee besides myself. She comes from Western Illinois, and this region is just completely different, according to her. Apparently out there it's all large commodity farms. Mm-hmm. Organic is not really a thing. There's just no organic presence out there. CSAs are unheard of. Local direct sales from farmers, unheard of. You know, it's a lot of corn, cows, and soybeans. And so for that area of the country, starting up a farm such as I run is probably not something that you're going to see in the near future.
Ben from Pachamama Farm, speaking of CSAs, first of all, your farm is only, what, 1 or 2 years old now?
Yeah, we're in our second year.
Okay, and so you launched a CSA, but again, young young farm trying to kind of build a customer base as you grow. How is that going?
It's tough. It's hard work. I mean, I agree with Kira that appreciation goes a long way in our business. And, you know, I can't speak to the whole country either, but I think that, you know, the entire East Coast, the West Coast, plenty of major urban areas, there's a large-scale small farm movement because of the ability that small farms have and the flexibility that we have to create really high-quality products. And, you know, I was listening earlier to deal with climatological change. There's totally different approaches between small farms and large farms. And as far as marketability goes in the Rochester, greater Rochester area, there's plenty of opportunities. I mean, without a doubt, we've seen a huge amount of growth in awareness, in the number of CSAs, in farmers markets are growing. That said, I'm a firm believer that there's always room for improvement in terms of education and awareness.
Ben, do you have another couple minutes that you can hang in there with us?
Sure.
Okay, so let's take the shortest break in radio because my engineer probably is wondering if I was ever going to do that this hour. I've got to let Kira get to her appointment. Kira White is the Vice President of Horticulture Affairs for Honey Hill Organic Farm in Livonia. She laughs when I say that, but, you know, it's a very lofty title. I think you've earned it.
I've tried.
You've definitely earned it.
Thanks, Ben.
Kira, thanks for taking the time, congrats on the success with Honey Hill Organic Farm. Keep up the nice work. We'll see your stuff around here locally, and we'll talk to you on the program again.
Thank you for having me.
All right, short break. Michelle and I are going to be right back with Ben Eskin from Pachamama Farm, and we'll wrap up our conversation on the state of agriculture in Western New York in this growing season on member-supported public radio. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on the Next Connections, we had to move our interview with Lieutenant Governor candidate Tim Wu. He joins us first hour on Thursday. Second hour, we talk to NPR's David Green and Robert Smith. They're coming to Rochester next week for an event, and we'll get a full preview. The voices you hear all the time on NPR talk to us live Thursday on Connections. Welcome back to member-supported public radio. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. My colleague Michelle Faust is here. We're fighting over who gets to keep Kira White's vegetables as she makes her way out from Honey Hill Organic Farm. Ben Eskin is on the line with us from Pachamama Farm in Farmington. Ben, we've been talking a lot this hour about the growing season itself, a late start, a very raw winter, and a cold early spring. How did that impact you at Pachamama?
It's funny. When I was on your show, we were all just in the early spring. We were all worried about getting a slow start in the spring. My mind's a blur because I've been working so hard recently. But you know, we've been fine. Our farm has been fine, and we had a great season. And honestly, in terms of all this weather stuff, I feel like every farmer is going to report something slightly differently. There's so many variables from a weather standpoint to a soil standpoint to from production and everything. So, but we've been dealing with it fine.
Do you root for, my background in a lot of ways as a journalist dovetails with the wine industry. So the odd thing is I know growers in the wine industry root for warm weather, but actually over 90 doesn't do them much good. So what kind of weather are you rooting for as we go throughout the summer?
Oh man, I don't even bother rooting.
And it's a waste of your time.
It's weather. It's hard to stabilize a business that is essentially weather dependent. And I was thinking about you and the wine industry today because earlier this year I was reading some newsletter from a California winemaker, and they were talking about kind of preparing their season and hedging bets based on the National Weather Service's long-term forecasts. And you know, then we read about the earthquakes out in California. You know, obviously it's crazy to, in my mind, to make predictions based on kind of long-term forecasts where there's this wide range of probability. I'm more the mindset of just try to be as adaptable as possible.
Well, it is definitely an industry where you have to be adaptable, but I mean, you've got to make some sort of predictions, some sort of plans when you've got a business. And the thing about it is, agriculture is food; it's many different things. But at the end of the day, you need to make a profit. So, I mean, how do you forecast for the future for growing your business?
Well, first of all, I'm not in the wine business. It's probably a good thing. It seems pretty scary to me. How do I forecast for making profit? I mean, right now, look, first of all, you're talking to a greenhorn. I mean, we're 2 years in, and one of the biggest challenges I face is that I have to wear a whole lot of different hats. I mean, you're talking about labor earlier as well. And I do the majority of labor on my farm, along with Emma and, you know, some volunteers. So it's kind of a nose-to-the-grindstone operation. And in terms of making profit, a lot of my focus is just in marketing. And that's why I stress education and trying to get, the price that really reflects the cost of what we're producing. And that's kind of where I try to keep my focus.
Have you gotten any recommendations from people who've got a little bit more experience?
Sure. I mean, in terms of, well, for example, you know, where we farm, we have really unique soil types. We farm on muck soils in Farmington, New York, and we're blessed in the state with some incredibly high-quality soils. And so, you know, we reach out to all sorts of different people. You know, we were talking with some muck soil experts a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, guys who have been farming in the state for, you know, since their childhood and grew up on muck farms. And yeah, sure, they give us tons of recommendations just from production standpoint and from crops as well.
And Ben, quick explainer there, and I should say, I'm familiar with the term muck farming because my wife's grandfather was a farmer in Yates County for years in the muck. And but if you didn't grow up in a farming family, you might not know the term. Quick explainer.
Okay, so muck soils, way back when the glaciers were traveling south, left a whole bunch of deposits called drumlins, and there's a drumlin right on my farm, and muck soils, kind of, at least where I am, are a little in the lowlands from the drumlin, and they're, wetlands that have somewhat dried up and created over thousands of years incredibly nutrient-rich soils. So, our muck soil has been tested, through Cornell, to have something around 30-35% organic matter, which is really, really high. This is the stuff that plants use to grow and do their thing. And so it's an incredibly nutrient-rich soil. The problem is it's slow to drain. It's like a sponge. So if you imagine a potted plant and you in your house and you pour water into it and the water kind of drips through, you poured too much and your carpet's getting wet, then imagine pouring that water into a sponge. That's kind of how muck soils
and
work.
And dark, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
It's dark, isn't it?
Yes, it's like chocolate cake. It's like the soil that farmers dream about.
Brownie
really.
Batter.
It's just beautiful and is great.
Before we let you go, Ben, real quick, where can people find some of Pachamama Farms, either online or where they find some of your stuff?
Yeah, well, our website is PachamamaFarmNewYork.com, so you can visit our website and find out tons of information about our CSA, and we have a Facebook page as well, so you can just pretty much find us on the web by searching for us, and, we sell to a lot. We have a 50-member CSA. When I was on in the early spring, we were pushing for a goal of having 50 families, and we met that goal, so we're pretty happy about that. And as far as restaurants go, you know, some of our big customers, our clients are Atlas Eats and Irondequoit, Good Luck, Lento, Aunt Rosie's. Those are some of the restaurants we deal with the most.
Yeah, nice to see the restaurant industry grabbing onto local farms like yours. Ben, cheers on your early success, and thanks again for taking the time to join the program today.
My pleasure.
Ben Eskin from Pachamama Farm in Farmington. Great panel this hour, and Michelle, there's so many issues that could be their own show. Immigration and labor, regulations and water. I mean, it's just really, you've covered it for years in Yuma, and you're smiling saying, yes, that's exactly what
absolutely.
Agriculture
is. We could talk about
diverse.
It for hours upon hours upon hours, and I've done plenty of hours of programming about that. So I'm very interested in learning all the different issues and how they relate directly to Rochester and to upstate New York.
All right, before we close the hour, what's going on? What else is going on in your world?
In my world? Yes. Well, I spent most of the morning talking about the Affordable Care Act, as I usually do, and as your regular listeners know that I come in here and I say, hey, Affordable Care Act survey, WXXI.org. Click the link that says ACA survey. It's up on the right-hand corner. It's a blue box. Click that link. Go there, take our survey, let us know any of the questions that you have about affordable care, especially if you are uninsured or you know someone who's uninsured, please encourage them to take it. Or if you want to email me directly, acawxxi@wxxi.org. Call if you don't like to do the whole email online thing, 585-258-0263. Thank you.
Who gets the vegetables?
I was going to throw these tomatoes at you, actually.
Yeah. They're beautiful. I was going to say cherry tomatoes. Some of them look like they're a little bigger. Beautiful, beautiful tomatoes over there. And Michelle and I, we may divide and conquer. Thanks for the great – I always love hosting with you. You can have this mic whenever you want it.
Okay.
Is that all right with you?
Sure.
It's all right with me. I'm probably all right with our listeners. Michelle Faust from WXXI, doing great work as always. And a man who rarely does great work but often adequate work is Dave Campo, the engineer. Oh, Dave is giving me the thumbs up again. It's a love relationship. Dave does great work, and I appreciate that. Appreciate you listening on this Wednesday afternoon. Tomorrow, Timothy Wu, running for lieutenant governor with Zephyr Teachout. He joins us in the first hour tomorrow. And second hour, David Green and Robert Smith from NPR National. They're going to be in Rochester on Tuesday. They're on this program second hour tomorrow. We'll talk to you then.